News Fellowship. Details at democracynow.org. Democracy Now! Produced by Renee Feldstein, Augusta Nermin Sheikh, Carla Wills, Laura Gottesdiener, Sam Alkoff, John Hamilton. Thanks so much for joining us. I'm Amy Goodman. Have a happy new year and good news next year.
You're listening to KBOO Portland. The time is just about 5 o'clock. Coming up next is your Friday evening news.
I'm Carrie from the Oregon Cultural Trust. Did you know that Oregon is the only state that rewards its citizens for investing in culture? It's true. When you make a donation to KBOO or one of more than 1,400 other Oregon cultural organizations, you become eligible for the cultural tax credit. It's so easy to do. Just match your KBOO donation with a gift to the Oregon Cultural Trust by December 31st and claim your cultural tax credit for the same amount on your 2017 state taxes. Your matching gift to the trust helps them double the love for culture, providing millions in statewide cultural grants every year. Learn more at culturaltrust.org.
Hope you might join us on New Year's Day of 2018 from 8 a.m. to noon for a special Michael Wells Memorial Dawn Concert. Michael Wells was a longtime KBOO volunteer, programmer, and worked as station manager and board member. Michael passed away last year. His many friends from KBOO and his family thought it would be a nice gesture to honor him by having a special Dawn Concert program to start the new year. In the early days of KBOO, Dawn Concert was a regularly scheduled morning program with a variety of program hosts. That's Dawn Concert honoring the late Michael Wells from 8 a.m. to noon on Monday, January 1st, 2018. Thank you.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, new Oregon public health and safety laws are scheduled to take effect on Monday.
Greg Walden's positions on health care, the Republican tax plan, and net neutrality may leave him vulnerable in 2018.
A federal judge has blocked Arizona's ethnic studies ban.
Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Friday, December 29th, 2017, the 344th day of the Trumpocalypse. I'm Sam Bowman.
And I'm Linda Olson Osterlund. Come New Year's Day, Oregon will set three new public health and safety laws take effect. On that day, Oregon will become the fifth state to raise the legal age for the purchase of tobacco or vape products from 18 to 21 years of age. Smoking is a leading cause of deaths in the state, and the belief is that raising the age may prevent potential smokers from picking up the habit. Another new law will allow Oregon judges to issue, quote, extreme risk protection orders, end quote. The order takes firearms away from individuals that are deemed at risk to themselves or to other family members. The gun owner would turn their guns in to police and can reclaim them when the order expires. The Reproductive Health Equity Law Act requires that health plans sold in Oregon must provide coverage for a wide range of reproductive health care services with no out-of-pocket cost. Services include a wide range of screenings and treatments, contraceptive drugs and devices, and abortion. It also covers undocumented residents and passed the legislature without a single Republican vote. And finally, Portland has won the right to reduce residential speed limits from 25 to 20 miles per hour. The rule change came in response to a significant increase in pedestrian and bicycle deaths on the city streets. Previously, it was up to the state to set speed limits, but now the city can set the limits on residential streets, and the state still sets the speed limits on larger multi-lane streets.
A Bend physician is contemplating adding her name to the list of Democrats eyeing Oregon's second congressional district seat. According to the Portland Tribune, the high cost of health care, coupled with Representative Greg Walden's efforts to roll back the Affordable Care Act, have prompted Dr. Jennifer Nearing to consider entering the race. The 51-year-old kidney physician is a political novice, but she has been meeting with voters and getting advice from Democratic strategists and politicians, including Representatives Suzanne Bonamici and Earl Blumenauer. If she moves forward, Nearing will be joining three men and one woman who have already filed to run in the Democratic primary. Walden is the 10-term Republican representative for the 2nd District, who is one of the House leaders in the effort to repeal Obamacare. His district is the largest in the state, but it's also one of the poorest and oldest, the two groups that would have been hit the hardest had the ACA been repealed. Walden has also given vocal support for the repeal of net neutrality and was a strong proponent for the Republican tax plan that was signed into law last week. Recent analysis has shown that the plan strongly favors corporations and the wealthy and may force cuts to Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid. These are government programs that many of Walden's constituents depend on. Sensing his vulnerability, the Democratic Party of Oregon has accelerated fundraising to support Democrat candidates who could defeat Walden.
Negotiations will begin in 2018 between the United States and Canada on the Columbia River Treaty. Conservation groups and tribes say the treaty should focus on the health of the river. Eric Tegahoff of the Oregon News Service has the report.
Columbia River Treaty negotiations between the United States and Canada are set to begin in 2018, and advocates for the environment say the river's health should be the focus of talks. Conservation, fishing, and faith-based groups, as well as tribes in the Columbia River Basin, want the treaty to expand its purpose from simply maintaining hydropower production and flood risk management. They say negotiators should modernize the treaty and include a third purpose, ecosystem function, which would help salmon and other species. Greg Haller is with the conservation group Pacific Rivers.
The Columbia River Treaty is often hailed as a model for transboundary management of a river, and we could actually truly make the treaty a model for transboundary river management by including ecosystem function as a primary purpose.
Conservation groups say focusing on ecosystem function would mean helping the river flow more naturally. The treaty was originally ratified in 1964 to reduce the flood risk in Portland and create more hydropower capacity. Salmon returns continue to drop in the river basin. Jim Heffernan, policy analyst for the Columbia River Intertribal Fish Commission, says he's encouraged that the U.S.'s top negotiator is following regional recommendations on the treaty. Tribes weren't consulted when the treaty was first negotiated, and their resources on the river have been hurt since, but they're excited that the ecosystem could become a focus. Heffernan says this term has a deep meaning for tribes.
What they mean by that is not just ecosystem services, things that people take from the river system. They view the salmon, the sturgeon, the bull trout, the wildlife that depend upon the rivers, as gifts given to them that they have an obligation and responsibility to take care of for future generations.
Haller says utilities such as Bonneville Power say they can't afford to do more for salmon. His and other conservation groups believe the opposite is true.
We think by doing more for salmon, it will actually produce economic, social, and cultural benefits that outweigh the cost that may be incurred through potentially higher rates.
Haller says Pacific Rivers represents millions of ratepayers in the basin who want their hydropower produced in a way that has the least amount of harm on salmon and other species. He also notes the Northwest is becoming less reliant on hydropower as the region's energy market diversifies. For Oregon News Service, I'm Eric Tegedoff.
The Oregon Department of Environmental Quality is planning to study is planning a study of pollution along a 10-mile section of the Willamette River. The study will be looking for pesticides and industrial pollution in river sediments in a stretch between the Selwood Bridge and the falls in Oregon City. The upriver stretch is not expected to be nearly as contaminated as the Portland Harbor Superfund site is, but it is believed to contain several hot spots containing heavy metals, petroleum hydrocarbons, and highly toxic PCBs. Traces of the chemicals were found in fish that live in the river. If elevated levels of dangerous pollutants are found, the DEQ will assess the risk to human health and arrange for a cleanup if necessary. The project is called the Willamette Watershed Toxics Reduction Partnership and is being run jointly by the DEQ and the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency, or EPA, which will fund the $100,000 investigation. The EPA is funding the investigation, and the project is being guided by a citizen-based steering committee that plans to meet again in January.
KBOO's blues impresario Joan Simpson passed away on Christmas Eve at her brother's home in Spanaway, Washington. For 15 years, Joan was the co-host of a KBOO show, Boogie in the Dark, and of Blue Rhythm. She was also the engineer for the morning talk show Radio Zine and produced the Wednesday community calendar. In addition, she was an active member of the KBOO softball team. Joan originally got her start in radio at Montana State University. Her curiosity and zest for learning broadcasting led her to substitute for multiple rock and roll shows before she was moved on to the MIT radio station to be a news anchor and substitute DJ. She joined KBOO in 1994 during a fall pledge drive and soon brought her engineering skills to the talk shows. She would often stay on for the Radio Zine and eventually made it part of her regular schedule. Joan's co-host, Errol Shervey, helped introduce her to the Cascade Blues Association, and she became a central figure in organizing the annual Portland Blues Festival. Joan curated much of her blues collection from nearby libraries and focused on women and Northwest artists, but always kept a keen ear for unique blues music. When asked in 1996, KBOO Volunteer's Spotlight article about how she had learned about the blues, Joan said, quote, "I've always listened to the radio, but when I was living in San Francisco in the early 80s, I'd go to North Beach to hear the blues bands. When I heard that music live, I just knew that I had found my type of music," end quote. Joan Semprebon enjoyed playing bass in blues bands and jams and had a timeless warm sense of humor. She was also a strong advocate for KBOO, and she said, quote, "If I had a magic wand, I'd make everyone in Portland and the surrounding areas listen to KBOO and open people's minds to new ideas and solutions to problems," end quote. Joan Semprebon is survived by Rolf, her husband of 25 years, her mother Arlene Enslow, and siblings Mary, Patricia, Teresa, Michelle, Mark, Ken, John, and Matt. A celebration of her life is taking place Wednesday, January 3rd at 1:30 p.m. at the Fir Lane Memorial Reception Hall in Spanaway, Washington.
Congress has provided funding for the Children's Health Insurance Program, or CHIP, over the next 3 months, but has yet to reach a deal for the long term. Nearly 100,000 Oregon children rely on the program for coverage. Eric Tegedoff of the Oregon News Service spoke with Tonya Hunt, Executive Director of Children First for Oregon.
A last-minute deal in Congress to provide short-term funding for the Children's Health Insurance Program hasn't done much to alleviate stress for states and parents going into the new year. Known as CHIP, the program helps cover 9 million children nationwide, including nearly 100,000 in Oregon. The congressional deal gave the program funding through March, but no long-term fix for states. Tonya Hunt, head of Children First for Oregon, says working-class families are in a tight bind on top of finding health care, facing rising housing costs, the high expense of child care, and relatively stagnant wages compared with high-income earners.
So that squeeze is already happening for our families. If you add in this impossible expectation that families are going to somehow come up with the full cost of health insurance for their children and themselves, the math just simply won't work.
Hunt says the program also helps stabilize the health market. She says if families wait until children have to go to the emergency room for an ailment and can't afford that visit, the cost falls on taxpayers. The bill has received bipartisan support since it was authored in 1997 by Utah Republican Senator Orrin Hatch. Hunt says the program is popular across the country.
It's really a mystery why it continues to suffer from the political gamesmanship in Congress to not receive the long-term funding that states need in order to plan for and implement the program adequately.
Republican and Democratic leaders in Congress have disagreed on how to fund the program. The total cost for CHIP in 2016 was nearly $16 billion, with more than 90% of funds coming from the federal government. For Oregon News Service, I'm Eric Tegedoff.
You are listening to the KBOO Evening News. Stay tuned for Counterspin at 5:30, followed by Bread and Roses at 6:00. At 7, it's Hard Knock Radio, news and views from a hip-hop perspective. Tomorrow's weather calls for a partly cloudy day with temperatures in the high 40s. East of the Cascades and Hood River, you can also expect similar conditions. On this date in 1890, the Wounded Knee Massacre occurred on the Lakota Pine Ridge Indian Reservation in South Dakota. The massacre took the life of over 150 Lakota men, women, and children, as well as 25 soldiers of the 7th Cavalry. In 1990, both houses of the U.S. Congress passed a resolution expressing, quote, deep regret for the massacre. Today's quote is from the Ogallala Sioux chief Red Cloud, who said, quote, "They made us many promises, more than I can remember, but they never kept but one. They promised to take our land, and they took it," end quote.
By any standard, 2017 has been a tough year for the United States. At home and abroad, many are upset by the radical and unpredictable behavior of the Trump administration. KBOO's Ray Bodwell has these thoughts as we brace ourselves for 2018.
I had the weirdest dream last night. Remember that guy who used to host The Apprentice? I dreamed we elected him president.
Jimmy Kimmel was just one of many who struggled to come to grips with the reality the day after the election a little over 13 months ago. And the more optimistic among us probably still thought there was a chance that Donald Trump would somehow rise above his basis instincts and grow into the job. But now, 345 days into his presidency, we know better. Heather Heyer, the 32-year-old anti-fascist protester who was run down in Charlottesville, wrote in her final Facebook post, quote, "If you're not outraged, you're not paying attention," end quote. And without a doubt, the contemptible behavior of the president and the men and women in his administration has resulted in 2017 qualifying as one of the most outrageous years in our collective memory. This relentless stream of attacks against societal norms, the social safety net, and our individual freedoms is draining. And it would be very easy to throw up our hands in despair and turn inward. But we can't do that. Admittedly, the American experiment in democracy is deeply flawed. But it's the only one we have, and if we let it completely slip away, we will never get another chance, or at least not in our lifetimes. For those of you who have managed to put the angry creamsicle and his cast of wealthy toadies out of your mind, following, in their own words, are just a few examples of why we should all remain outraged.
Photographs of the inaugural proceedings were intentionally framed in a way to minimize the enormous support that had gathered on the National Mall. This was the largest audience to ever witness an inauguration, period.
You're saying it's a falsehood, and they're giving Sean Spicer, our press secretary, gave alternative facts to that.
I don't make up anything. Let me tell you something. I have done a great service to the American people. Everybody's got to be covered. Now, I have to tell you, it's an unbelievably complex subject. Nobody knew that healthcare could be so complicated.
But you also had people that were very fine people on both sides. You had people in that group. Excuse me. I saw the same pictures as you did.
You know what I'm... look at my African-American over here. Look at him. Are you the greatest?
In order to fulfill my solemn duty to protect America and its citizens, the United States will withdraw from the Paris Climate Accord.
No, I think that measuring with precision human activity on the climate is something very challenging to do, and there's tremendous disagreement about the degree of impact.
Any reductions we have in upper income taxes will be offset by less deductions so that there will be no tax, absolute tax cut for the upper class.
So let's talk about after school programs generally. They're supposed to be educational programs, right? I mean, that's what they're supposed to do. They're supposed to help kids who don't get fed at home get fed so they do better in school. Guess what? There's no demonstrable evidence they're actually doing that. There's no demonstrable evidence they're actually helping results, helping kids do better in school.
I'm here today to announce that the program known as DACA that was effectuated under the Obama administration is being rescinded.
America will put our embassy in Jerusalem. No vote in the United Nations will make any difference on that. But this vote will make a difference on how Americans look at the UN and on how we look at countries who disrespect us in the UN. And this vote will be remembered.
We've ordered a crackdown on sanctuary cities that refuse to comply with federal law. We've begun a nationwide effort to remove criminal aliens, gang members, drug dealers, and others who pose a threat to public safety, and are even creating a new office in Homeland Security dedicated to the forgotten American victims of illegal immigrant violence, of which there are many.
The United States has great strength and patience, but if it is forced to defend itself or its allies, we will have no choice but to totally destroy North Korea.
The future of this country cannot afford to lose a seat. So get out and vote for Roy Moore.
A few days ago, I called the fake news the enemy of the people, and they are. They are the enemy of the people.
Those were just a few examples of administrative behavior that would have been considered inconceivable before Trump. And if you combine the moral bankruptcy and narcissism of Trump with a self-serving Republican congressional majority backed by a seemingly endless supply of dark money, you come to the realization that the fight will not be easy. But resist we must, because Trump himself has given us an idea of what his vision of the ideal American government would be.
Let me tell you, the one that matters is me. I'm the only one that matters, because when it comes to it, that's what the policy is going to be.
For KBOO, this is Ray Bodwell wishing you a happy and involved new year.
On Wednesday, a federal judge blocked Arizona from enforcing a law that bans ethnic studies courses. The decision, announced by a federal appeals court judge, Wallace Tashima, is the latest in a seven-year battle over teaching about Mexican Americans in the Tucson public school system. The decision results from a 2010 lawsuit brought by students against the Arizona Board of Education. The suit claimed that the law, which banned courses designed primarily for students of a particular ethnic group, was racist and targeted Mexican Americans. Judge Tashima agreed with the suit, saying that the ban was, quote, not for a legitimate educational purpose, but for an invidious, discriminatory, racial purpose, end quote. Tashima also said the state could not keep funding from schools for not obeying the ban. The state's threat to withhold more than $14 million forced Tucson to drop its Mexican American Studies program in 2012.
The Trump administration is preparing to roll back offshore drilling safety regulations. The Obama-era regulations were put in place after the 2010 Deepwater Horizon oil rig explosion that killed 11 people and led to the worst oil spill in U.S. history. The 2016 regulations tightened controls on blowout preventers, devices that are intended to stop explosions in undersea oil and gas wells. The rules also called for rig operators to have third parties certify that the safety devices would work under extreme conditions. Industry groups, like the American Petroleum Institute, have long opposed the safety rules. They claim that the regulations would reduce capital investment in the Gulf by $4 billion a year and threaten 50,000 industry jobs. In April, Trump signed an executive order that directed the Interior Department's Bureau of Safety and Environmental Enforcement to review and reconsider a number of its oil rig safety regulations. In a statement, Scott Angel, director of safety at the Bureau, said, quote, "By reducing the regulatory burden on industry, we are encouraging increased domestic oil and gas production while maintaining a high bar for safety and environmental sustainability," unquote. The rule change will save the energy industry an estimated $228 million over 10 years. Environmentalists are expected to fight the rule change.
Today's report from Climate Connections looks at how climate change is impacting French Champagne.
I'm Dr. Anthony Lizowitz, and this is Climate Connections. For Michel Drapier, owner of a historic vineyard in France, champagne is not just a drink. It's a legacy.
Today, I'm the seventh generation of the same family producing champagne.
He says global warming is changing champagne production in both good and bad ways. Warmer temperatures can help grapes thrive, but extreme weather, like heavy rain and hail, can threaten crops. Drapier is confident that his business can adapt by managing pests and disease and by storing reserves of wine that can be bottled and sold in years when the harvest suffers. But he realizes that climate change is affecting the world far beyond his vineyard, so he's taking action to address the root cause.
We're proud to be the first champagne house to be carbon neutral.
The business produces nearly half of its electricity from rooftop solar and has aggressively reduced fuel consumption. To offset its remaining carbon emissions, Drapier has invested in a wind turbine project in India.
It's not for us. It's for the whole population of our world. And it's for the next generation.
Cheers to that. Climate Connections is produced by the Yale Center for Environmental Communication. Learn more at yaleclimateconnections.org.
With much of the U.S. suffering through a brutal cold snap, climate denier-in-chief Donald Trump took to Twitter yesterday to say that the East Coast, quote, could use a little bit of that good old global warming this weekend, end quote. Temperatures across much of the East Coast are 15 to 30 degrees colder than the average for this time of year, and the global temperature map shows that currently the coldest temperatures in the world are in central and eastern Canada and the United States. Forecasters are predicting that New York City could see the coldest New Year's Eve celebration it's had for 50 years. But climate scientists are quick to point out that although much of North America is freezing, the average global temperature has continued to rise year after year. Following the tweet, meteorologist Eric Holthaus wrote, quote, "This is what happens when you try to run the country without a science advisor," end quote. A number of climate scientists followed Holthaus, saying that this tweet demonstrates that Trump is unaware of the distinction between weather and climate.
Former FIFA World Cup Player of the Year George Weah has been elected to be the president of Liberia. This is the first democratic transfer of power in the West African nation in over 70 years. Weah won by a wide margin, and on Friday, outgoing Vice President Joseph Boakai congratulated him on his victory. The National Election Commission declared Weah president-elect and his running mate Jewel Howard Taylor vice president-elect. Their coalition for the Democratic Change Party received over 61% of the final tally over Vice President Boakai's Unity Party. Africa's first female president, Nobel Peace Prize winner Ellen Johnson Sirleaf, will be stepping aside after two terms at the head of the nation founded by freed American slaves. She led the country during back-to-back civil wars and oversaw it through a grim Ebola outbreak that claimed the lives of almost 5,000 Liberians.
The Associated Press reported earlier today that a gunman opened fire outside a church in a Cairo suburb near a store, igniting a shootout that killed at least 9 people, including Coptic Christians. The attack is the latest in a series of incidents targeting Egypt's Christian minority. Officials said the gunman had and at least one police officer were also killed. The local affiliate of the extremist Islamic State group is claiming responsibility for the attack this afternoon, saying it was carried out by a, quote, security detail. The group is also saying that one of its own men was martyred in the violent incident. The attack happened when a gunman attempted to break through the security cordon outside the church of Marmina. Although it has not been clear how many assailants were involved, Egypt's interior ministry is only referring to one.
You are listening to the KBOO Evening News. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call us with your breaking news stories at 503-231-8032. Our production team for tonight's newscast is Ray Bodwell and Zelos Marchant. The producer is Ray Bodwell. Special thanks to Eric Takehoff and the Oregon News Service. The engineer is Jenna Yokoyama. Excuse me. The KBOO Evening News and Public Affairs Director is Zelos Marchant. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You can also find us on Facebook and Twitter at KBOO News. You're listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Linda Olson-Osterlund.
And I'm Sam Bowman.
Welcome to the Best of Counterspin for 2017. I'm Janine Jackson. Each week, Counterspin looks behind the headlines, asking what and who might be left out of the stories corporate media are telling, what questions are unasked, what alternatives unconsidered. And at the end of the year, we revisit just a few of the conversations it's been our pleasure to bring you. There were many, many important stories this year. Events, bewildering and significant in themselves, media coverage that shaped public understanding, activists and journalists and researchers who